Now, look, by this stage, I'm feeling really sorry for Carl Sullivan, because here's sort of the industry response to all the misery we've heard about tomorrow's perils. And I'm still quietly imagining being able to ski in this burning hot world somewhere, if I don't freeze to death, in Europe. From the point of view of the industry's response and how it handles it, Carl Sullivan is General Manager for the Risk and Disaster Directorate at the Insurance Council, responsible, among other things, for facilitating the industry policy and initiatives regarding emerging risks, as well as coordinating the industry's response. Please welcome Carl Sullivan.
Thank you very much. No slides from me. Just leave that one up. So the ICA's role in all of this, we've heard the doom and gloom and the terror and some bits and pieces about market opportunities that exist in there for the industry as well. The ICA's role is to convert what the actuaries say, what the scientists say, into practical guidance for government. And that's where the wheels start to wobble on the billy cart quite badly in some cases, because practicality and political expediency often don't end up on the same page very comfortably. So I just want to talk very quickly about the ICA's role over the last 5 years in managing that issue, what the local market is doing in terms of insurance affordability and addressing the short tail risk out in front of us compared to the future out to 2050, 2100, and with a particular focus on Far North Queensland, of course. And then I'll finish up on a couple of very short points about where do we see things going next in this debate in the local market. So first of all, pricing to risk. That's been the mantra that we've been maintaining with government over the last few years. If we roll the clock back Doctor Who-wise 6 years ago, you'll find that insurers didn't get as much access in Canberra or in state governments to lobby government to do things like mitigation or better mapping or anything like that. We weren't sending a price signal that affected mum, dad and nana, but we are now. And nothing motivates change like hip pocket pain or we're increasingly see a bit of hip pocket pleasure. Insurers now have a much larger voice in Australia than we previously did, and that's because the price has gone up for those who have high risks. Not always accurately, not always perfectly, and that is where we have to focus our efforts. Other things that insurers are doing there, to pick up on what the other speakers have consistently said, is focusing on a couple of things. First of all, new capital. What are the things that we can do as an industry, or what markets can we start to access for cheaper capital? Where can we shave off a few points? How can we squeeze it down so those reinsurance costs and capital costs aren't transferred through at such a quantum? And we've seen things like catastrophe bonds start to enter the market increasingly, and we've seen things like co-insurance arrangements start to become more common. But by far, the majority of our effort has gone into trying to encourage governments to make smart choices with regard to lowering the risk that the community faces through increasing resilience, right down at a practical and local level. So you've heard Frankie from the QRA talk about what Queensland's done in that space. And again, if you Doctor Who'd it and went back a decade ago and had a look at flood mapping in Queensland and mitigation, you'd be honestly quite appalled. They're now the leader of the pack in Australia in terms of how good their flood mapping is and the maturity of their mitigation programs. And it is manifesting on the ground to equal lower premiums for people who see that shift to a safer position. So we're trying to encourage government to focus on the risk and getting that down. And unfortunately, again, that's where the practicality meets political expediency, and political expediency can often trump it quite badly in some cases. So we see government increasingly looking at intervention in the market to get some short-term changes to the price signal that insurance is sending. Now, of course, many of you would have contributed to the Productivity Commission around this issue, and the Productivity Commission has maintained a fairly staunch economic or cold economic line around don't interfere with the price signal delivered by insurance. You will get a malformed approach in the long term. You will find more properties built in more hazardous locations in a less resilient way. More of those straw homes built in the Blue Mountains, surrounded by lovely gum trees. And if we start to dilute the price of insurance by artificially introducing some kind of intervention, long term that's what you start to get. So the current interventions that government has announced is opening the market in far north Queensland to unauthorised foreign insurers. Now they're clarifying that people can access an unauthorised foreign insurer already through a broker, but essentially they're seeking to encourage consumers up there to approach a broker to obtain cover through an unauthorised foreign insurer who does not have to abide by the same capital requirements and regulation requirements that many of your employers have to abide by. So the theory being that they will be able to obtain cheaper insurance, however, without the consumer protections and the capital protections sitting behind them. The other thing that they've introduced, and that'll be out by March 2015, is a comparison website that will allow people, and the details are still fairly grey on this, allow people in some postcodes to review typical prices for their properties in hazard-prone locations throughout Queensland, and then they'll be able to go and purchase. Of course, the industry's fear is people will start to purchase on price alone, and where people purchase on price alone, they will often end up with the product that does not suit their circumstances. So the classic case being if insurer A is offering flood cover and insurer B is not, the house is heavily flood prone, of course insurer B is going to be able to offer it at a drastically reduced price. And on a first pass, many consumers may find that overwhelmingly attractive and purchase the lower priced cover. Of course, comes the time for the very predictable flood, you'll find that that person doesn't have the cover, and we're back to the situation that the QRA was formed to try and address. So what are the other things we're doing to help with building resilience in the community? Strata was a particular touchstone for the government straight after 2011, unrelated to the actual events at that time, but of course the technical price being charged for strata was orders of magnitude lower than it should be. And many insurers started to move towards the technically correct price. The average shift in far north Queensland for strata that we observed was between 300 and 400% in a single year. The highest one that we saw was 1,350% for a single strata development. Now, you can't change the price of anything by even 100% and not expect people to get a permanent orange afro and start yelling about it. And that's essentially what we've seen. The reality, however, is if you look at an individual strata unit holder in far north Queensland and compare the price they're paying to an equivalent house on the ground, so standalone home and contents, they're on parity or a little bit lower. They're actually still paying a little bit less than people who own a standalone house. So we've done a number of research, commissioned some research with James Cook University to look at what's driving the losses in strata and how can that be addressed. And the government has actually announced that they'll roll out one of the recommendations, which was an engineering strata inspection scheme, so the body corporate can get a grant, can go and have a risk engineer analyse their property for insurability. That's the important bit, not for building code compliance, but what might lead to claims in that particular property. The body corporate would then have an opportunity to address those problems and improve the resilience of the property, make it less prone to a claim. Of course, if the property scores very highly and it's a very low risk, they can then use that report with an insurer or several insurers to advocate for a lower premium. So that one's rolling out. As we understand it now, the Queensland government is pushing forward with that. Excuse me. We've looked at a range of options to analyse resilience at an individual property level. We've created a program called PREP, the Property Resilience and Exposure Program, which has three levels. It's a program to work between local governments, individual local governments, and the insurance industry. The first phase of that is they give us all of the hazard data that they currently have for their location. Sometimes that's a disappointing conversation. Other times they have a great deal of material. We then respond with whatever industry data we can leverage and provide to them. And Frankie mentioned the memorandum of understanding between the industry and the Queensland government. That's an example of how that's working. The second phase of that is the local government collects critical building data that we then provide to insurers. So, of course, in a flood zone, the most critical building data is that floor height, demonstrating that the house is actually far less susceptible to an extreme claim than assuming if the house was built simply on the ground. The last thing that we've done is we've initiated a project called the Data Globe, which pulls together every piece of hazard data, primarily flood but also bushfire, in Australia from individual local governments and agencies, and makes it universally available to insurers so that then they can compete on price. They can compete on how smart they are about using it. And more importantly, we give that back to governments who are part of that scheme so that for the first time we can all be talking about the same homes in the same location with the same exposures. We find many of our conversations get lost in an endless loop about what's an extreme risk compared to a high risk compared to a medium risk. So that's an attempt at harmonisation. Where next? What are the things that we see that we'll be focused on in the next few years? Adaptation is where it all is for our industry. How will the industry help with the adaptation? First of all, continuing to send the price signal, sending it fairly and sending it on the best possible information that we can access. As I said, sometimes it's not always as good as it could be. We do see some hints that government and through the Productivity Commission might be increasingly interested in insurers disclosing to their client the hazard information that they're relying on to make those decisions and set those prices. And we believe there's some issues around that. But there is a middle ground there where industry and government could potentially start to agree on a common set of hazard data for an individual address or certainly at a postcode or town level. We'll be continuing with our hazard data partnerships with each government. So we've already got an MOU with Queensland. We're currently talking to two other state governments who have looked at that, seen the benefits, and now want access to industry data, and in return they're willing to improve the data that we currently rely on. Mitigation priorities is a really exciting one. Several state governments now formally consult with the industry to ask where should they be putting mitigation next and to what extent should it be built. So should the levee around Rockhampton be 7 metres high or 10 metres high? Getting down to that sort of level of discussion. And last of all, product development. I think over the next 5 years we're going to start to see new products and old products reinvented and recut. As the market starts to become a little bit more segmented for consumers, so the pigs in the straw houses right next to the river or in the fire zone, are going to start looking for smarter products that they might be able to segment their risk on. So they might only want a bushfire product, and they're happy to self-insure for all the other issues. Now, of course, with that, Kate, comes a lot of responsibility for us to educate the community about what it is you're buying, and you've got to read that PDS. And there's probably not a person in this room that's read their PDS cover to cover. I've worked in the industry for 10 years, and I've not met one yet. So I'm not saying it's a failed system. I'm just saying we can get a lot smarter about it, and that's going to be a major topic for discussion with the government to help with adaptation in the community. So thank you.